Well, this is the time of year when you always look ahead, and in this case, see what the Roaring Twenties are going to be like, or at least 2020. And to do that, we have one of the most respected and usually accurate economists. That's Robert Dye, chief economist for Comerica. But now, considering what went on in the Middle East, we have a lot more to talk about. Robert Dye joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thanks, Dave. Good to be here. And yeah, the events of last night just really underscore the sense of uncertainty ebbing and flowing throughout the decision-making process out there. And I think that's one of the key issues for next year, is really thinking about how does uncertainty impact the economy? Has it decreased? Is it increasing? Where is it coming from? Where is it going away from?
The uncertainty, though, but I naively thought this was behind us. I said, well, you know, the Fed's pretty well on track, and they're not going to do anything this year. That was the signal. Brexit is behind us. China says they want to stimulate their economy. It looked like we had, and phase one, it was imminent, you know, with China. So it eliminated that sort of Damocles. It's been hanging over us for a year. When do we got to get rid of the uncertainty?
So we had the GM strike, UAW strike, that was 6 weeks in the fall. That's resolved. We've got, in addition to phase one coming up, we've got at least the House passing USMCA. So that sense of uncertainty is diminishing. So in many ways, the impeachment proceedings behind us from the House point of view, that's done. So a lot of those sources of uncertainty, I think, have diminished. And then overnight, we see, well, there's more uncertainty, geopolitical uncertainty out of the Middle East, oil prices coming up a little bit. And then a little while ago, we hear that Boeing is going to bring their 737 line completely off production. And we're not sure when that's going to come back. So and I think if you put all this together, you can make a case that there is less uncertainty at this point than there was, say, 3 months ago. But that doesn't mean we've gone from a lot to zero. We still have a good amount of uncertainty out there. And in a low-growth economy, I think that uncertainty matters a lot, because that's where businesses are really making their decisions on the margin, and they're trying to factor in these events that are very, very difficult to quantify.
Very, very difficult. I would think that the trade dispute had to be, you know, most disruptive for them. The other thing is, we always look for black swans, that thing we didn't even know existed. It comes out and bites us and, you know, undoes a perfectly good bull market, for example. We've been through this. We haven't been through this in a long time, but this kind of tit-for-tat thing in the Middle East, this is not entirely new.
Well, you're right, and those events that do come out of left field are always what seem to trip us up. And in 2007 and 2008, it was a housing crisis that led into a complete financial market meltdown. That was endemic. That started within the U.S. Let's call that an endogenous black swan within the U.S. There still could be, outside the U.S., exogenous black swans. We could have an event in Europe. The European economy is very, very soft. Maybe they're banking system is a little bit less robust than ours right now, and maybe there's some issues there. And then looking to Asia, you know, China, as you said, I think has taken some positive steps, and it looks like they're leveling out a little bit. But maybe they take a stutter step and have a miscue, and their financial system starts to show signs of stress. You know, that gets instantaneously transmitted across the world, and so there's still a potential for these events to come out from left field, from within the U.S. and from outside the U.S. as well.
You know, maybe I'm still looking for a pony in this enormous pile, but there's been a spike in oil prices. Oil had been kind of drifting on up, and obviously with the saber rattling now in the Middle East, it's really picked up. And by the same token, my sense is there are a lot of oil companies in this country, in Texas in particular, that are teetering, that really needed something good to happen to them. Can this be a savior for some?
Well, I think due to the fact they were producing so much more energy in the United States now, that a increase or a decrease in oil prices is almost a neutral event for the U.S. as a whole. Where it gets interesting is now on a regional basis, because higher oil prices hurt the consumers, and we could say those are the population centers on either coast, and help the producers, and that's going to be Texas, mid-continent locations that are producing the oil. So it definitely creates winners and losers within a regional point of view. But in terms of the overall economy, higher oil prices leads to more drilling, leads to more business investment activity, leads to more demand for manufacturing products and other things like that. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for the entire economy.
All right. So you all have recently put out reports on at least three of your major states of operation, of California, of Texas, and of Michigan. So what are you seeing? Does our bull market continue in Texas?
Well, I think Texas has got a lot of good stuff going for it. And as you know, the energy sector has been soft here. A lot of the hot money left the oil space after, seeing fairly weak returns. And we saw the drilling rig count come down significantly. And it looks like just in the last few weeks or so, toward the end of 2019, it's starting to stabilize. And too early to say that it's definitely stabilizing, but I think the numbers give us some hope here that we're sort of bottoming out. And now with the recent rally in oil, maybe we'll bring that back a little bit. And that'll be a nice stabilizing factor for Texas. But so much is going on outside the energy space. I mean, we're still, getting that 727 worth of people coming into Texas every day. Still have major parts of the economy that are expanding very, very rapidly. Service sector, anything that's demographically driven, doing very well. And that really helps to set the state up for ongoing long-term growth.
A lot of those people are coming from California, if what we understand is true. Ultimately, this can't help California's tax base if everybody's leaving.
Well, no, and it is a major issue for California. We also do a lot of business out there, so we pay attention to that quite closely. And I always like in California, I call it the blender economy, and things are pouring in the top and coming out the bottom. And what's coming out the bottom of the California economy, and any industry is sort of a commodity-based industry that is basically looking to lower its production costs. It's the only way you can increase your bottom line is to cut costs. Those businesses can't work in California. It's just too high cost to do that. And the other thing they're losing are the retirees and other people that are looking for lower cost of living. Now, what they're gaining is the real whiz-bang high-tech stuff. And if that part of the economy is doing well enough, then they can continue to lose the lower value-added industries. But we're certainly gaining here in Texas for any industry that wants a mid-continent, cheaper location, good quality labor, relatively low regulatory environment, all that sort of stuff that we all know about, definitely attracting business from high-cost areas.
I like the wrap-up there, because ultimately I think you called Texas a bottom feeder, but that's all right. Well, if we're getting out of the bottom of the funnel, Dr. Robert Dye is chief economist for Comerica. It's always good to spend some time with you. Thank you, sir.
And thank you, Dave. Good to be here.
Thanks. Happy New Year. And for more of our conversation with Dr. Dye, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.